This episode is brought to you by Reese's Peanut Butter Cups. In breaking news, leading scientists worldwide are conducting experiments to determine if Reese's Peanut Butter Cups are the perfect combination of peanut butter and chocolate. However, it appears the study was inconclusive, as the scientists couldn't help but eat all the Reese's. Because when you want something sweet, you can't do better than Reese's. Find Reese's now at a store near you.
Are you thinking about getting into Dungeons & Dragons? Maybe you're looking to expand your horizons as a DM or a player. If that's the case, then it's time for you to check out The Dungeon Cast, the best D&D podcast out there that helps you passively learn all about the game just by listening. Join co-hosts Will and Brian as they break down the lore of a rich multiverse 50 years in the making in a lighthearted and beginner-friendly way. They cover everything from character creation options to tips for dungeon masters. There's something for everyone, no matter how long you've been playing TTRPGs. Find The Dungeon Cast anywhere you get podcasts or on YouTube.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to IGN GameScoop. I'm your host, Damon Hatfield. Joining me here in the studio this week is Nick Limone.
Hey, how's it going, everybody?
And this week we're also joined by Sam Claiborne.
Hey, everybody.
And Justin Davis.
Scoop.
We had a great show for this week. 2024 is just off to a great start. Not only did we get Prince of Persia a couple weeks ago, today, Tuesday, January 23rd, when we're taping this, we put up reviews of both Tekken 8 and Like a Dragon Infinite Wealth, both of which got a 9 out of 10.
Ooh. Wow. Yep.
I want to play both of those. And then, of course, the game of the moment so far is definitely Power World, which has just been an incredible success, and lots of people are playing that, including Nick, for a little bit. So we'll talk about that as well. Yeah, we are taping this on Tuesday this week, because Thursday, when we normally record it, is my birthday, and I'm going to Disneyland.
Ooh, nice. Huzzah! Happy early birthday.
Nice. Early this week. So lots to get into. But first, I have an announcement. Ladies and gentlemen.
Uh-oh.
I finally saw Godzilla Minus One.
And?
Hey! Yay.
And I loved it. And like everyone else has already seen it. They know how great it is. Yeah, of course. It's amazing. I think it's the best Godzilla movie ever made.
Wow.
Wow. Yeah, I mean, okay, so time to go to the theater then.
Dude, yeah.
Go to that weird theater in Juniper Serra.
Yeah. Yeah, it's so good. I mean, like I said, everyone has probably already seen it. And if not, you've heard about how great it is. In case you haven't heard why it's so great, they got the formula exactly right. It only took him 70 years. So Godzilla is awesome. He's in it a lot. Right from the get-go, Godzilla is in it. There's lots of cool destruction and action. And then also the human characters are actually well-written and relatable for once. So even when Godzilla's not on screen, you're happy to just hang out with these characters because they're so likable and well done. This is it's a Godzilla movie where you root for the humans.
It's an interesting setting too. Like post-war Japan is like such a unique take for Godzilla.
Yeah.
So it's pretty solid all around.
At its core, it's about people trying to pick up the pieces of their lives and move on after this terrible war. And just when they barely start to get back on track, then Godzilla
shows up.
No, it's so good. Definitely my favorite movie of last year, easily. And I think the Oscar nominations came out today. I think it should have been nominated for Best Picture.
I mean, just the scene that we just saw in the footage here of them like getting chased by Godzilla Jaws, like, Jaws style scene, like just incredible stuff right there.
It's like cool stuff that you, there's like more stuff that you haven't seen in a Godzilla movie before, but maybe you've wanted to.
Really?
Yeah. There's like stuff you've like wanted to see Godzilla do before, but you haven't, and you get to see him.
There's interesting situations they find themselves in that are like, why didn't they do that before? That's so obvious, so cool. Yeah, there's really cool
stuff. How's our chonky boy this time?
He's pretty chonky.
Not as chonky as Godzilla, the legendary Godzilla, I think.
Correct.
Yeah, and this is probably the angriest Godzilla's ever been.
Well, I think Shin Godzilla was a little angrier. Well, there's something evil about Shin Godzilla.
I know what you mean. But he like has a really angry like expression.
Yeah, yeah. He's definitely more emotive in this one.
Yeah.
He feels more like an animal in this movie.
I love so this scene that you're seeing here where he's chasing him. This is an amazing scene. I do think it's funny though. There's a little bit of suspension of disbelief required because like they're in the middle of the ocean and Godzilla just stands up.
It's like, yeah. Oh, really?
Nothing like, in the rule book says maybe he's treading water underneath. No, you know?
Yeah. He's got great core strength.
He's a water polo player in a former life.
Godzilla's very big, but he's not taller than the deepest depths of the ocean.
I mean, but maybe there's like an island like about to poke through right there.
Maybe.
Like, you don't know.
I just thought that was.
They're near Japan. There's lots of islands. Wait, so is it nice to see a Godzilla movie without King Kong in it?
Yeah.
Oh, 100%.
Yeah, finally.
100%.
Well, it's easily better than any of the legendary Godzilla movie, MonsterVerse stuff. So much better than any of them.
I think bar for bar, the Toho stuff hits way harder than any of the legendary. No offense to them over there in the at legendary.
And it's a period piece, right? Yeah. So it just looks cool.
Yeah.
Yep, it looks cool. Great performances. I think it's the best Godzilla movie ever, but it's not just a great Godzilla movie. It's a great movie that will appeal to people who aren't even Godzilla nerds like myself.
Also, incredible hair on that scientist.
Yep.
Incredible hair. Good looking head of hair.
They did it. There's a very cute video on social media today where, they were nominated for a few Academy Awards.
The core team was just
so excited to see, and the tweet caption was just a reminder that these awards, you can roll your eyes at them or whatever on a personal level, but for the people making the art, it's still very meaningful for them to be recognized for it.
Absolutely.
Also worth noting that this movie completely embarrasses modern Hollywood blockbusters, having been made for $15 million. It's just a tiny fraction of the budget of...
Wait. The CG and everything?
Yeah.
Yeah.
The movies cost $15 million. It's crazy.
No.
Yeah, dude. It's completely insane.
You and I could make that movie.
Let's go do it.
Oh, there it is.
So happy. Yeah, very cute.
Seeing that they got nominated for Best Visual Effects, I believe.
Yep.
Anyway, it's great. Everyone out there has already seen it, but I recommend Sam and Justin, you guys see it as well.
Okay. I'm looking at movie times right now.
Well, pay attention to the show also.
It's going to make for good scooping.
Let's get into Pow World. Man, it's only been out for 5 days now, I think. It's sold 6 million copies.
I feel like that number changes every day. That's nuts.
It does.
That's nuts. That's an astronomical number.
First it sold a million copies in 8 hours. And then it sold 2 million copies in 48 hours. And now 5 days in, 6 million copies in. This is a game that's also available on Game Pass.
Correct.
So not everyone has to buy it, but they're still buying it. Of course, the PC version is supposed to be the superior version to play at this point. But yeah, so 6 million...
As we're recording...
What's that?
Sorry, just as we're recording this show, each day, it's growing day over day in its concurrent viewers. So obviously cumulative sales, they can't do anything but go up. But the fact that usually games have a launch weekend and then slowly stair step down. Power World is at 1.8 million concurrents earlier today. And that was bigger than yesterday. That was bigger than the day before. That makes it the second highest game for concurrent players on Steam ever. If you don't know, Steam stats are public, right? So people log them and store them. And so it's just beyond it's a big hit and is becoming one of those Elden Ring cultural phenomenons.
Yeah. Yeah. Over 1.8 million concurrent players. That makes it the second most played game ever on Steam. Number one is PUBG with a record that it will be really tough to reach. It's over 3.2 million concurrents back in its
heyday. Oh my goodness.
Will not be beat.
Yeah, probably not. But man, people were this was, I think it was announced at a Summer Game Fest, either last summer or the summer before that.
Yeah, a while ago.
People thought it was that's a novel concept. I want to play Pokemon with guns. But it wasn't there wasn't a long hype train for this like there was for, Spider-Man 2 or, Starfield or Breath of the Wild or Tears of the Kingdom. It didn't come out of nowhere, but I don't think people were expecting this.
Right.
I mean, I think the thing that gets me is that, it is Pokemon with guns, but it's not just it's not a cheapy let's make Pokemon with guns, but it's actually leaning into you are going to exploit these cute animals and put them to work in your minds. it's really playing up that kind of but it doesn't do it in such a nasty way. It's kind of a tongue in cheek way. It knows what it's doing and knows the tone it's going for. Mm-hmm. And it's almost a little bit darkly satirical in a way that when it did just look like Pokemon with guns, I didn't expect that at all to kind of nail that tone and that vibe. So that I honestly was not that interested in the game until I kind of learned that exploiting these super cute animals for your own kind of capitalistic game, the game leans into that attitude and that positioning. That makes it a lot more interesting to me. Not because I'm some evil person, but just
you're a Factorio fan.
You're not an evil person yet.
it makes it a lot more interesting from just the stance the game is taking to me than just kind of being a gimmick.
It certainly awoke something, and I learned a little bit about myself when I was playing the game because I was like, okay, I got my base of operations going. All my pals are mining. They're contributing to the Nick Lamone cause. Mm-hmm. And then I noticed one of my pals, because when you're in your base, it shows you the progress of everybody, how they're doing mentally. And one of them says, One of my pals was, he decided to start slacking off. And the second I saw it, I was like, well, this is unacceptable. I need to make a, I need to prove a point. I need to, you know, make an example of him. And you can also execute your pals in front of other pals and eat their corpse to set an example, motivate people as it were.
You can you can eat them. Like this game knows what it's doing, where like it leans into like the Dark Lord element of like, you know, the juxtaposition of these super cute animals and then you exploiting them and putting them to work. Like, you know, it's interesting, right? That it's fun in sort of like a darkly humorous way.
One of my pals developed an ulcer. Yeah, I don't know. I was like, bad working conditions? Who's to say? I run a perfectly reputable company over at Nick Lamone Enterprises. It's fine. It's all good. I'm taking care of my pals.
I haven't gotten a chance to play it, but I want to play it maybe tonight, actually. But Nick, you have been playing it.
Yeah, I have.
A little bit. And is it true? It's not really Pokemon with guns.
No.
It's more like ARK survival with Pokemon.
Yeah, it's definitely more leaning into the survival, like crafting style game. So me personally, I'm not a huge survival crafting game kind of guy. I'm not a big tree puncher. That said, this does alleviate a lot of the tree punching sensibilities that I'm usually sensitive to. Because as you can see here in this footage here, you can place different contraption stuff around your base, and then you have to build it. This is usually where a lot of the survival crafting games take me out of it, all the tree punchers, is the time it takes to build something, where you have to hold a button down, you're not moving, and then you have to wait 40 seconds for a thing to get built. But what Pal World won me over on is that when you have pals at the base, they'll run over while you're building something and contribute to it. And heck, even if you walk away, they'll continue building it. So you can basically make a fully autonomous base while you go about doing all the fun stuff, like exploring. All your pals back at home, they can do all the more menial tasks like farming, they can do lumber gathering, all that stuff that usually turns me off of these games. So as long as you can kind of manage this small team of pals, you can kind of do whatever you want in this game, as long as, you know, obviously it fits within the schematic of the game.
Mm. And you're playing the Game Pass version, right?
Yeah, I am playing the Game Pass version on PC, mostly because I was like, well, I don't know, you know, given my history with these tree puncher games, I'm not big into them. The last thing I want to do is spend $27 on Steam. So I was like, I already have Game Pass, and I have it on Game Pass on PC, so why not?
Yeah, that's where I'll check it out, even though it's supposed to be a little bit behind.
It is behind compared to the Steam version. I think that has to do with the way Microsoft handles the hot fixes, because I'm sure those have to go through cert through Microsoft, and you know that takes time, whereas Steam developers are able to kind of push those hot fixes live. Also, one big discrepancy I noticed, because we have Pal World here in the office on our Steam, or my coworker's Steam account, and I noticed that the Steam version has DLSS support, whereas the Game Pass on PC version does not have that currently. Mm. So that's a big one. If you need a DLSS to assist with your game fidelity, then you might want to opt for the Steam version. For now.
I mean, it's such a, I'm so glad that the game, you know, turned out to be good, right? Because again, I know I kind of already made this point, but like it could have just been Pokemon with guns and it's silly and it's a gimmick game that would have its moment in the sun. But like, you know, it's a little bit of Pikmin, you know, it's a lot of like, you know, that survival crafting game, which has become, it's the biggest genre on Earth now. It is a little bit of Pokemon. Like, you know, the fact that they programmed it in that your pals could have ulcers, it's like they knew what they were doing, right? Like they're going for a vibe that's like very deliberate. And, you know, good on them. Like there's a little bit of controversy around, obviously, like, are they too close to Pokemon? Like, you know, and that would not be cool. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, make an original game, make your own character designs. Mm-hmm. Like, and you know, that maybe some of them are kind of AI assisted, which would also, in my personal opinion, not be super cool. Mm-hmm. But, you know, by and large, I'm glad that they made a compelling game instead of just making a gimmick.
I like to see, a relatively unknown developer come in and be so disruptive.
It's interesting. Like,
most publishers, you know, they would kill to have this sort of success and this amount of buzz and attention for their game right out the gate, you know, in like pocket.
Well, right after the day before happened, that was only buzz and all this stuff. They had to make a statement that this is a real game before releasing it. to Game Pass, by the way, which should indicate that it's a real game, even whereas Steam does not, frankly.
And
you can put whatever the heck you want out on Steam or on the Nintendo eShop.
Yep.
it's all purely hypothetical, but I do wonder if, like, all the accusations on the internet surrounding how this game has, however they came up with their PAL designs, I do wonder what, you know, the folks over at Microsoft in charge of bringing this game onto Game Pass are thinking, like, you know, what does that look like if, for whatever reason, PAL World ends up getting in trouble for those kind of plagiarism.
I mean, it means that it already passed the most legal proceeding, mm-hmm. like, hurdle that could ever exist.
Right.
Like,
that's why
Microsoft is letting it be published. Like, they did their work. Like, who's upset now are fans. Fans do not like the idea of Pokemon not being on Nintendo systems, even though that's not what this is.
Yeah.
Well, and they also are so attached to Pokemon and Pokemon designs that they think it's lowbrow or offensive to be, you know, using these designs.
Look at Digimon.
I'm speaking for people on our staff that feel that way.
Yeah, but it's like, look at Digimon. All these designs look very similar to Digimon, too.
100%. That's a point that I've made several times.
We want, like, I really want to just stress that there is nuance here between, you know, like, you have these cutesy animals and they look kind of like Pokemon, but they're all original designs, versus you can go too far. You can have designs where, like, they copied Pokemon and they took it too far and they broke the law and it's unethical in a way that, like, they could have made this exact same game, but if they had their own bottoms up designs mm-hmm. that aren't sort of deliberately, like, you know, we have Pokemon at home, that aren't Pokemon knockoffs, like, you know, there's nuance here that, like, I think the dialogue will continue to kind of emerge in the days and weeks to come of, like, some of those side-by-side photos, when I look at them, you know, I'm kind of like, like, guys, like, you couldn't.
Yeah, but, like, but also parody complicates this, right? Yeah. Because if you're going to admit, we are just watching a parody film together, actually, everybody here, that very much used parts of other movies because it was allowed to, because it's parodying them. And, you know, the closer this gets to being a cynical commentary on, you know, the enslavement of Pokemon, which is, like, completely valid. Pokemon actually are sentient creatures that are kept in balls for dogfights, right? Mm-hmm. Like, come on.
Yeah.
Like, that's worth parodying. And if you're going to parody it, well, the closer you can get to, you know, the Chin Pokemon version of Pikachu, the funnier it is. It's super defensible, you know? Yeah. And it's like, it's all about the context. So, like, even if the creatures look exactly like Pokemon, the fact that they're in a dark context would actually pass muster on a cover of Mad Magazine. Mm-hmm. Whether it passes muster here depends on a lot more than them just looking like the Pokemon designs.
And where was this kind
of,
like,
that's a great point.
Oh, go ahead, Justin. Sorry.
No, I was just echoing, like, yeah, that's it. That's a great point. That was it.
And I'm curious, though, like, you know, obviously it's due to the massive success of PAL World, but, you know, were people this upset with stuff like Temtem, which was basically copying the Pokemon formula, turn-based, collect-a-thon style?
Bug snacks.
Yeah.
Much closer to the Pokemon gameplay, but actually more original creature designs.
Yeah, exactly. But right. Like, if anything, I think Game Freak and whoever, you know, it works on Pokemon games, like, I think the next logical question that I'm thinking of is just, what can Pokemon learn from the success of Power World? And it's obviously not put guns in Pokemon, which, I mean, that maybe is that actually the answer, because I would sell gangbusters, but I think it's maybe a Pokemon survival crafting game, like make a Pokemon tree puncher.
No. I completely agree. I mean, look, like, the what Pokemon can learn from Power World is such an eye-rolly headline. Unless, like, look, like, if you come at it with, like, an actual good, positive intent.
Legitimate. Like this was popular.
We have PTSD from that headline, though, right, Justin? Yeah, being around at
that's very, very true. But, like, there is, like, you know, the last couple 3D Pokemon games have been technical disasters, right? And that's so, like, this game is really beautiful. Like, I think, again, as someone, like, you invoked it earlier, Sam, like, I really love Factorio and those kinds of games. Like, I'm really intrigued by the fact that you can keep your pals busy and assign them to things and have them doing things. And there's a reason to go out and collect them all. You're not just using six at a time. Like, if there's a Pokemon game where the other 140 Pokemon are off doing something for me in, like, an Animal Crossing like way, mm-hmm. like, that's what sort of, like, rustles my jimmies from a video game perspective.
You know, the most surprising thing in the development of this, even before the numbers started going crazy, is that everybody that touched it pre-release that we got access to loved it. They're like, I didn't want to love this game because I was just doing my job here, but, like, I cannot stop playing it, and it's so good. That's like, when does that happen? When do just a bunch of people just try a game that we didn't really have on everybody's radar for any other reason other than its memeability, and they're like, I can't put this game down, it's so fun.
Our review is still in progress, but our, you know, you can read our review in progress on the site, and it's already very positive.
I think really my only complaint I have with this game is the three different art styles that seem to clash with each other, with your player character, the environment, and also the pals. They feel like it's just kind of all clashing, like Unreal Engine, you know, store-bought assets and whatever. Like, this game looks like all of those videos that we see on online of, hey, we recreated Ocarina of Time in Unreal Engine 5. And it kind of looks like that, but I'm like, you did, but it doesn't look great.
Yeah, Link looks like super deformed or something. You're like, what's happening?
Like, this
here?
Game looks like
and
it's missing a shader.
Everything else is super hyper real.
Like, the shader's missing here.
In terms of you know, the backlash against it, if you will, by Nintendo fans and Pokemon fans, aside from the, you know, the how similar the pals are to Pokemon, do you think there's something to be said for Pokemon fans being frustrated with how unambitious Nintendo and Game Freak seem to be with Pokemon and not wanting to innovate? And also the more recent entries being sort of unforgivably buggy, being they're made for just one single platform?
Yeah, totally. Absolutely.
I mean, I think that's a completely valid, you know, valid perspective and sort of adds to the discourse around Pal World.
I'm a huge Pokemon fan. I mean, I'm a product of the 90s, so I was like raised on Pokemon. And, you know, the frustration I feel like when I got Pokemon Sword and Shield, when I got Scarlet and Violet, it's the thing that I want to kind of recapture that nostalgia I had back in the 90s. But just running into systems where it's like, no, it's still designed for kids, which I can understand that. But also, like, I don't know, I don't remember these games being this buggy when I was a kid. So it wasn't as janky, whereas, you know, looking at Powell, it's like, well, it doesn't always have to be the same way, you know, spoon-fed the same game over and over and over again. And granted, Scarlet and Violet does have a little more open world, free-form gameplay allowing you to do gyms in different orders, but, like, I don't know, man. I loaded in the first hour, 2 hours of that game and clipping through the floor and having Pokemon, you know, fall through the cracks of whatever a part of the map I'm on. It's kind of embarrassing, I think. I just, like, how do you let a product like that go out? It's especially performance-wise.
Yeah, the multiplayer stuff is especially bad, too.
Performance-wise, it's like 15 frames a second. It's ridiculous.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, not exactly well-designed. Like, you know, sometimes it's balanced by art style or whatever, but no. That's not happening either. It looks drab. I've been steeped in the guide for this, even though I haven't got to touch it myself yet. I do want to try it out. And you know, it's weird because I actually don't like crafting games. So every other thing about this appeals to me. I like the concept of, like, you know, catching a bunch of Pokemon that aren't Pokemon. There's a apparently the best way to, you really need to level up fast to do a bunch of cool stuff and get better critters. But to do that, 10 of every pal, no more.
Yep.
Catch them. Catch as many as you can up till 10, and then it's diminishing returns.
Confirmed.
That's the current strategy for really good XP.
I watched Stella's wonderfully made video about it, and I was like, I know what I need to do now. All right, let's go. Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's like, it's so popular. Like, the fact that it's popular has become part of the story, right? Mm-hmm. Like, it's reached that level of success where, like, now it becoming this phenomenon is, like, the discussion point almost as much or more so than the actual game itself. Like, 6 million units in a few days. Like, how many billion dollar, like, did Jedi Survivor, like, whatever that game was called last year, like, did that sell 6 million copies? Like,
every big publisher is taking note of this and be like, what? You know, Sony.
We got to put more guns in our games.
Like, what are you guys doing?
And as usual, they're going to draw the wrong conclusion, right? And, like, not get that they're not going to get it. Like, you know, sometimes the grassroots, like, sometimes something not being polished and being a little bit rough around the edges is like part of the appeal in a weird way. And that indie nature of, like, we're going to make something, like, a little bit weird and a little bit niche, but in some ways that actually is what enables it to sell through these millions and millions of copies, like these kind of, like, streamer bait games. Like, it's a thing.
Think about the unseen subscribers. And we were talking about this earlier, but, like, do you think this is, like, Game Pass's biggest bump ever? Like, why pay any more than whatever it is, $14 or whatever, to just play this game for a month? You know, it's amazing that they got this out on day one.
Yeah.
I don't know why I was picking on
Early
Jedi. Like, take your pick of game that came and went last year. You know, Resident Evil, whatever. Like, Power World is going to outsell all of them, almost all of them, in a few days.
Yeah.
You know what's nuts is that there's another highly loved and sought after game coming out this week, Enshrouded. That's a crafting game. And I say love because it was part of Steam Next Fest, and it's been a top five wishlisted game all year. That's coming out this week.
Cool.
Like, they must be bummed.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's rough timing.
I also, like...
Go ahead.
Oh, go ahead, Damon. Oh, just, like, the kind of closing thought is, like, you know, we're still in the game's opening. We're still discovering the game, discovering the pals, discovering the tricks. But it couldn't possibly be a more expandable, extendable game. Right. Yeah. Like, and that's that's just really exciting and cool that like it's going to be here with us. There's going to be Gen 2 for like, you know, for years. Oh, right. Assuming they don't get sued into oblivion by Nintendo's, you know, giga lawyers, like, you know, this is just a thing now.
Well, breaking news, everyone. IGN's final review of the Steam version of Pal World just went live, and we gave it an 8 out of 10.
Nice.
For an great early game. Access game. That's pretty nuts.
I mean, Baldur's Gate 3 and Early Access got a 7.
Yeah, fair.
So when this is all well and done, maybe it'll be another 10.
Possibly. Wow. Yeah. That's exciting, though. That's fun.
I think...
Also, if you're playing, go check out our map. It's amazing. The map for Pal World is a really well-made map from a very, very talented team that got way out of it.
It's everything Pal World is really... blowing up on IGN. The number one thing on IGN right now is Brian Altano's op-ed about, is it fair to call it a Pokemon ripoff? Then from that Pal World guide, you've got how to breed pals, best pals to catch early to mid-game, Pal World technology list and how to unlock. It's just everything on the site right now that's performing is related to Pal World.
I need to keep Nick Lamone hooked. They need to give me lore. I need Pal World lore, please. I want to know why this world exists.
Funny.
Yeah, what about the enemy force, the syndicate?
The syndicate, yeah. What's their story? Where'd they get all those handguns? Where'd they get all those machine guns? Who are the biggest weapons dealers on the island? I need to know all this information.
You'll have to wait for the movie coming from Sony Pictures. 2028.
The final record that it's set this week is Pal World is now the most played Japanese developed game on Steam ever. It beat out Elden Ring.
We're delaying Final Fantasy VII Rebirth to add survival crafting mechanics to the game. Yeah.
They just need to add Moogles. More Moogles.
Yeah.
Put them to work. Dancing.
All right, so Pal World is out. It's huge. It's an 8 out of 10 from IGN. But two more games got reviews today. That's Like a Dragon, Infinite Wealth, and Tekken 8. And both of those got a 9 out of 10. I want to play both of these games. Maybe let's start with Like a Dragon, which, Nick, I know you've been playing.
I have been playing, and I have beaten it.
Oh, my gosh.
A long game, but my God, from beginning to end, that game had me smiling from ear to ear. It left me in tears multiple times. Oh. I think that Like a Dragon Infinite Wealth is better than Like a Dragon in every conceivable way.
Wow.
And I think that this is just another textbook example of turn-based RPGs are not dead, my friend. They are still here, and people are innovating and evolving them. And I think Infinite Wealth is a perfect textbook example of that.
Yeah.
It is so much fun, and like every Yakuza game before it, it is so generous with the amount of content that it gives you to experience. And it's all meaningful. I mean, speaking of Pokemon knockoffs, there's a whole mini game side quest called Sicko Snap that is just Pokemon Snap, but you are taking pictures of weirdos in Hawaii. It's incredible.
In Speedos.
And there's Tsujimon, which is a full-on, you can collect all these strange men that are scattered throughout Hawaii and then battle them in turn-based combat. There's a Pokemon game inside the new Yakuza game. There's a Pokemon Snap game inside the new Yakuza. And there's a crazy taxi. There's much stuff in this game. And also...
You didn't even mention Animal Crossing.
And Animal Crossing. There's Sega Bass Fishing. There's a Spike Out. And a Virtua Fighter 3 TB.
What,
is the Animal Crossing thing the island game with like its own title screen?
Yeah, Dondoko Island. Yeah. Yes, and I didn't.
Is it?
It's like Animal Crossing.
You build
buildings and.
It's like Animal Crossing combined with Legend of Zelda to some extent, where you have to like fend off enemy what are they called, washbucklers, who invade your home. So you have to like bat them away and fight them off and build your island. And the more you build to your island, the more you recruit other iconic Yakuza characters. So it is, again, just, we are spoiled with the amount of content that is in this game.
Well, I mean, you touched on something earlier. I was so happy to see in the review, you know, you're mentioning just like, look, like Yakuza 7, it's a great game, right? Like everybody really liked it, but it was a little bit of like, a little bit of like a gimmick and a little bit of them being like, haha, like it's not going to be a brawler this time. Mm-hmm. We have this new silly RPG combat system. Whereas this one, I'm so excited to read that like, no, this is actually a really, really great, like, capital R RPG, like one of the best actual turn-based RPGs that's come out in a long time that stands, you know, it doesn't have to just rely on like the silliness of the lore and like the storyline and like, you know, it actually like just from a gameplay perspective, like RGG Studios has sort of come into their own as like a top tier RPG developer kind of out of nowhere. Like that's so exciting to me.
And like,
so Can you explain to me how we can get a Yakuza or a Like a Dragon or a spin-off game like once or twice a year? We can't, that's like the biggest, most critically lauded game, you know, like big in size, like actual, like a long, like extensive RPG game. But we can't get an Elder Scrolls every 15 years. How did they figure this out? How did they figure this out?
Every Yakuza game, well, I mean, 8 is maybe not a great example, but I know you're kind of making a goof, but the actual truthful answer is that they reuse locations, right? Hmm. They revisit the same cities and locations over and over and over again. And like Sega's managed to sort of pull this magic trick off where that, you know,
gameplay,
the same character models, the same music, the same cities, the same. But like in this game, instead of that being a criticism or a bug, it's a feature, right? Like people are excited to go back and revisit and be like, oh, like I want to talk to the shopkeeper again that I haven't talked to since the last game came out a year ago. And like, you know, how has it changed? How is it different? Like the city has become a living, breathing character of its own. And so that lets Sega kind of get away with a lot of asset reuse that like other developers might be sort of panned for. Mm-hmm. But, you know, but obviously, like, again, I said that maybe that's not a great example this time around, just because it is in Hawaii, which I think that's a new city. Like, I don't think any of the other.
This is the first time they've been to Hawaii, but. Yeah, you 100% nailed it, Justin. Like it is, they get a lot of mileage out of using Kamurocho, Ijincho, Sotenbori, mm-hmm. and all these places that we've been to before. But they do a good job of recontextualizing locations we've been to where, you know, in one game, this one building was always closed down, but another, now you can finally go in and, you know, different factions and whatnot. But like, it is kind of weird. This game is, it's difficult to recommend as like your first Yakuza, because like so much of this game is built on the fact that it is the previous series main protagonist, Kazuma Kiryu, teaming up with the new series protagonist to tackle on the story together. So there is a lot of mileage that comes from, hey, if you've played previous games, and there's a lot of wonderful callbacks to some pretty like profoundly beautiful moments with Kazuma Kiryu, because it is somebody who's gotten older. You know, when Yakuza started, he was a much younger lad, and now he's grayed out and still a badass. But there's just a lot there that I'd want to talk about more. But again, I'd be too worried of spoilers. But there's just so much goodness to be had in this game. And look, you can throw somebody into a car. And if you don't like the turn-based combat, when you're Kazuma Kiryu, later on in the game, you unlock the ability to turn the game into a traditional brawler for a brief period of time. And it's like, what a smart adaptation of everything Yakuza is. Like, that is a perfect encapsulation of what makes Yakuza so special. They're not afraid to get silly by doing some pretty groundbreaking stuff in that regard.
I mean, it's the 9th mainline Yakuza game, even though it's 8 because 0, there's the prequel that came out. There's a couple of remakes that were basically brand new games. There was also some spin-offs. There was two sort of historical games that took place in the samurai era of Japan. And yet somehow this game is, what, the 12th or 13th game in this formula? And it's arguably the best one they've ever made. Like, that's unbelievable. It's not just completely tired and played out by now.
There's so much goodness to be had.
I'm getting really excited to play this. Sam, I know you liked Like a Dragon as well. Are you going to play Infinite Wealth?
Well, is that okay just to only have played, yes, like, you know, half of like a dragon and then roll into this?
100%. I think that if you want to get like everything that this game has to offer out of it story-wise, it might be worth watching like a quick TLDR on the Yakuza story just to get familiar with Kazuma Kiryu. Because I think
because I'd never heard of that character.
Yeah, Kiryu is like Kasuga Ichiban is like the homie, but Kazuma Kiryu is like, he'll take care of you no matter what. He's always down for anything. Good dude through and through. And you'll learn
about
it. I love
Hawaii as a setting too. And it's like Hawaii plus like the streets of Japan, which I guess would be, you know, I don't know. Hawaii does have islands like that, which is just interesting to me. It's a great setting.
There's a lot to explore in like a Dragon Infinite Wealth outside of Hawaii.
Cool. Man, just talking about it and seeing this footage is getting me very excited to play that.
And there's jobs. We didn't even touch on the job class system. You can turn into a desperado. You can turn into an action movie star whose the outfit is Bruce Lee inspired. Like, there's so much wild stuff in this game that's just so clever and smart. There's dungeon crawling. There's just over-the-top summons. Good stuff.
Action star.
Well, I also want to play Tekken 8, and I haven't played a Tekken game since Tekken 3.
I'm scared.
In the original PlayStation, why are you scared?
I'm not a fighting game guy, but I want to play it so bad.
I'm not a fighting game guy either, but I like a good single-player story mode in a fighting game. Like, I've also been playing Mortal Kombat 1, enjoying that immensely. And Tekken 8 is supposed to have really great single-player content. There's an arcade quest, and then...
That's kind of surprising to me.
Super Ghost Battle. Yeah, I said, I haven't played a Tekken since Tekken 3, so I don't know how common it is for this series to have good story modes, but Arcade Quest it gives you a crawl through various arcades, and then your avatar that you create moves through different opponents while slowly learning about Tekken 8's mechanics.
Oh, that sounds cool.
But then do you know about Super Ghost Battle?
Yeah, it does.
I don't know, but I'm interested.
You challenge a CPU it's built with AI from learning. It watches you and learns your playstyle.
Oh, wow.
And you can train your ghost by fighting against it to learn your own tendencies. And you can download and play against other ghosts from other players, too.
That's so smart. And that feels like a thing like, wait, has any other fighting game done that before? Because that just makes sense.
I just think AI has gotten to
that
point
the thing
where
it can
do that.
What was the race? Was it Forza? There's a racing game franchise that supposedly, I don't even know how true this ever was, but supposedly like if you're racing against, like I'm racing against Paris Ghost, and like the ghost races the way he races, right? Like either aggressively or passively. And like, so like a fighting game version of like, you know, this person sweeps the leg a lot, therefore their AI is going to sweep the leg a lot. Like that's pretty clever, right?
Yeah. Oh yeah. That's awesome. And it's a great way to learn, you know, where your weaknesses are. Mm-hmm.
Well, and it dodges the issue of like, you know, CPUs in fighting games are really exploitable and kind of predictable. And like the only way they can really win once you get good enough at the game is kind of just by cheating, right? Like you can kind of cheat your way through the AI. But having the AI, you know, sort of perform more human-like of like they're going to throw a lot, they're going to jump a lot, you know, they're going to do, you know, special moves a lot. Like it adds a little bit more spice to the AI fights. Yeah.
Like I said, when I was playing Mortal Kombat 1, if I can cheese an enemy in a fight, I have no problem. If I can just kneel down and punch, just mash a punch button and then just win, I'll totally do that. No problem 100%. Doing that. I have no problem getting on my phone.
You know, when it comes to wireless carriers, sometimes what you see isn't always what you get, except with Visible. With Visible, what you see is exactly what you get. If you haven't heard of Visible, well, now you have. They're the wireless carrier that's making wireless visible. It's in the name. With Visible, there are no hidden fees, no fine print, no hassle, nothing to hide. It's just $25 a month, all taxes and fees included. And you don't need more than one line of wireless to save. You can save on a line all to yourself with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon. And again, just $25 a month. The future of wireless is here, and it is transparent. If you want more transparency in your wireless plan, you want to be on the Visible plan. Switch to Visible today and save at Visible.com. That's Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com. This episode of Game Scoop is brought to you by NordVPN. As Scoop Nation knows, your Omega Cops have been a little obsessed with a movie called Weekend at Bernie's lately. But as happens too often these days, it is difficult to find it streaming here in the US. That's where NordVPN comes in. With NordVPN, you can switch your virtual location to a more enlightened region where they appreciate the comic delights of Weekend at Bernie's. And it's not just for streaming movies and shows. Switching your virtual location can allow you to save money by purchasing flights, hotels, and subscriptions from other countries at a cheaper price. And you can do all this worry-free as NordVPN threat protection features protect you from viruses, malware, and phishing sites. Best of all, NordVPN costs the price of a cup of coffee a month, and one account can be used on up to 6 devices. To get the best discount on your NordVPN plan, go to nordvpn.com/gamescoop. Our link will also give you 4 extra months on the 2-year plan. There's no risk with Nord's 30-day money-back guarantee. That's nordvpn.com/gamescoop.
Pal World, Tekken 8, Like a Dragon, Infinite World, so many good things to play right now. But I want to look back. I have an update on my endeavor. I said last year I've embarked on an endeavor to determine what is my favorite game of all time.
Back into the Mind Palace.
Yep, it's something I hadn't revisited in a long time, so I'm trying to just, what is my favorite game of all time? And as an exercise, I was trying to come up with my favorite game from every system I've owned. Anyway, I don't have the answer yet, but I'm getting closer. I think I have a short list of 20 games.
Okay.
That I would consider my favorite games of all time. Mm-hmm. And when I really try to scrutinize this, I can't imagine removing any of these games off this list, although there are like other games that come to mind as like, well, that could be on there too, but I don't know. I've gotten it to a point where I don't know what I would replace.
Okay.
And this is,
you don't have to. You can just keep adding to it.
I know, but I want to eventually find out what is my number one. So it has to get funneled down somehow. And I'm doing this all emotionally. This is not based on like what was the most important or how influential was this game. This is just me personally, the games that I've had the most fun with, that I have the best memories of, and that I still like to play today. So the list of 20 games alphabetically that I have so far are either Breath of the Wild or Tears of the Kingdom. One of them, but I don't know which one.
Well, that's a conversation in itself.
I know, but it'll be one of those will be on this list. Dead Cells.
Okay, hold on. You've already skipped past the Bs and you forgot Bionic Commando.
I know, but it's like how many NES games should be on here? And I've got Mega Man 2 and Shadowgate. And Double Dragon 2.
Okay.
Hold on.
Well, obviously drop Double Dragon 2 and add in Bionic Commando.
I love Double Dragon 2, but okay. I'm adding a note. This is the problem.
Damon, you just got to go in a dark room, hang upside down, blindfolded, and repeat this list verbatim by memory. And if you forget a game, then it's gone.
Okay. That's a good one. Okay, Breath of the Wild or Tears of the Kingdom?
That's a great test.
Dead Cells, which I really, even though it's
great game, recent,
I think I could play it forever. And it's got all the pieces.
That one.
It's got the great pixel art. It's Metroidvania-ish.
And they added Castlevania
in it, so it's like, it's perfect. Disgaea.
Wow, that's a... Mm-hmm.
Just Disgaea Vanilla?
Well, they re-released it as Disgaea Complete, so... I'll go with that one.
That's a good game. Great game.
I'm going to include an arcade game, Dodonpachi. My favorite shmup, a game I'd be happy to play anytime.
Very good.
Donkey Kong 94 on the Game Boy. Mm-hmm. Then Double Dragon
Just
2.
Just in the D's still.
Then Double Dragon 2, I'm putting an asterisk on it, but I love Double Dragon 2, my favorite brawler, and I love the music. Elden Ring.
Wow.
Might be surprising. But yeah, I think it's one of my 20 most fun experiences I've had playing a game. Ghost of Tsushima.
Wow. That surprises me too a little bit.
Well, it's, you know, consider like, I love open world games. I love Japan. I love being sneaky in games. It's just got all of that in there.
Sure.
Half-Life 2.
Yep.
Inside.
Mm-hmm.
KOTOR. Mario Odyssey. Perfect game.
Solid.
Mm-hmm. Mass Effect 2.
Mm-hmm. Mega Man 2.
Perfect Dark.
Arguable.
Shadowgate. Shining Force 2. Then we're down to the last three. Oh, Sam didn't like Shining Force. Great game. Sam doesn't like
Turn-based. No, Shadowgate. I just think it's always weird that you put on Shadowgate.
Damon loves Shadowgate.
I love Shadowgate. It's not the best NES game, but I love Shadowgate. The final three are Spelunky.
Wow.
Splatterhouse.
Yep, I remember that era.
And Symphony of the Night.
pretty damn good list. Yeah.
I mean, yeah, obviously it's a good list, but yeah. So Bionic Commando is a good note. The other one that keeps me up at night is Portal 2. And it's like, what, is Portal 2 on there? Where would it go? I don't know what would it replace. Yeah.
Lose Portal Mass 2. Effect.
What about DuckTales?
Lose Mass Effect altogether. Throw in Portal 2.
I mean, Mass Effect is one maybe that I could replace.
I love Mass Effect. Don't get me wrong. But I'm like, do I want to play Mass Effect 2 in 2024? Nah.
It's
I'm good.
Yeah,
so no, is there not a single Super Nintendo game on there?
On my 20? I guess not.
Gasp.
Yeah. I guess I didn't. Yeah. And I don't know that I would add one. I don't know that I would... You know, Mario World or Super Metroid or Link to the Past, I don't know that I would bump any of these for...
Stunt Race FX. It looks like it's real life.
Anyway, that's what I'm working with. That's where I'm at right now with this exercise.
It's a very Damey list. Well, I think you're going to have to think about... I might not, but like, do it however you want. But like, I think that... here's my advice to you that you didn't ask for, but I'm going to give
Factoria.
Please, just add Factoria. You got it. Like, Splatterhouse is on here for a specific reason, right? Because of the vibes and the ultraviolence and the sprites, huge. Mm-hmm. But like, there's certain games that are the whole package, right? There's the games that deliver the presentation, but also the gameplay, and also like the gameplay in Splatterhouse isn't anything super special, in my opinion. No. Like, you got to have the 360 as you're getting down. When you're narrowing this 20 down to 10 and then down to 5, that's what it's got to be. The 360 view of what games are the whole package doesn't have it all.
All right, well.
You still get your gore in Bionic Commando.
That's true. That's actually a really good point.
Only one of those games has Thane in it, though. Can't believe the Mass Effect 2 erasure happening in this podcast right now. He's so cool.
Thane is cool. And so is Garrus, but you know what? Sometimes you got to make a hard choice.
Maybe I would replace Double Dragon 2 with Bionic Commando. I'll consider that, Sam.
And then you've made no progress.
I'm telling you, you just got to repeat the name out loud, names on this list out loud. If you forget one from your top 20, it's gone forever.
But there's so many other games. These, you know, I'm just going to throw out games that did not make the top 20, like Superhot, Slay the Spire, Skyrim, you know, Tomb Raider, Cyberpunk, Dead Space.
Peggle?
Dead Space Remake, Peggle, of course, like Horizon Forbidden West. Into the Breach, God of War 2018, Pac-Man Championship Edition, DX.
Oh my God.
Castlevania Dawn of Sorrow, you know, Burnout Revenge.
Contraforce.
All the golf games, the Hot Shots golf games, the Mario golf games. There's so many that I have already whittled out.
What was the Contra game I can never remember the name of?
Hardcore.
Yeah.
Good game.
You just got to get really into, you know, little simulation colony games like me, and then it would just be Dwarf Fortress, and then your decision.
What's your favorite? What's your favorite Streets of Rage?
2, but I like Double Dragon 2 more than that.
Really?
Okay.
And then my favorite brawler is Splatterhouse. So maybe that's the reasoning for taking Double Dragon 2 off. I already have a brawler on there with Splatterhouse.
That's true. You can do these games in head-to-head matchups and cut the list down that way.
That's true. I like doing that too.
I was always way more into River City than Double Dragon. That just worked for me more.
I'm gonna have IGN or engineering create an IGN face-off.
Everyone can vote on your games.
Only I will do it, and that will determine.
That's so smart.
That's a pretty good idea.
Okay, extra curriculum.
You know, Damon, just real quick, you can just make that. It's not an engineering thing anymore.
I can make a face-off?
We should just do it. You can make a face-off, yeah. We have the tool for it now.
And I can use it without publishing it, so I can actually use it?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, we have an internal version of it.
I'm going to do it. And maybe,
I can walk you through it.
And maybe I'll record it.
Record a video, yeah.
And maybe that'll be...
That'd be fun.
Maybe that'll be good.
With your microphone, because we need to hear your out loud musings and reasonings, yeah.
Well, yeah, of course. It's not just going to record the clicking.
I don't know. That'd be pretty funny.
I like. Hey, this. I'm just a producer.
You look at the mouse cursor, it's struggling. Then you can make your own story with that.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, I like this. This will be a good project for me. Okay, extracurricular activities. I have 2 anime recommendations. I know Nick has watched both of these as well. They're both on Netflix. The first one is an older one from 2020. It's called Dorohedoro. Dorohedoro. I know you watched this. I just finished it. Sam or Justin, are you familiar with Dorohedoro?
No, I've never heard of this.
I saw your tweet, and that was it.
Okay, it's about a guy who has a lizard head, but his human head was turned into a lizard head by a sorcerer, and he's obsessed with finding the sorcerer that did this to him, and he has his help. That blonde lady there is his friend, and she's a badass fighter and also makes really good gyoza. So they're trying to find the sorcerer that did, they're trying to find the sorcerer that did this. But there's a lot of sorcerers, and they live in their own realm, and they can pass back and forth to like the human realm, which they call the hole, and their own sorcerer realm. And then you get to learn about a bunch of the sorcerers that live there, and they're all very interesting, wild people. And the tone of the show is very silly and goofy, but it's also super gory and violent. But because there's magic involved, a lot of the violence can just be reversed, and people are fine again. And it's great.
Oh, wow.
Doro Hedoro.
Yeah. Does it have like a complete, like, does it end? Or is it
So season one was in 2020, and they announced season two 4 years later, so.
I think season one does serve as a nice, like, self-contained kind of arc, though.
Got it.
Who's that skull guy?
You get what you need.
That skull guy is a girl.
Cool. I love Heart Man, the heart guy's head. So good.
Yeah.
Just wearing a heart for a head. I love it.
And he wears it backwards, too.
So good.
Why are these sorcerers turning people's heads into stuff?
That's a good question. That is a good question. All the sorcerers wear masks, too. And each one has a different mask, and they don't really explain why they do that. They have perfectly normal faces underneath their masks.
It usually means you need to assassinate them all one by one, and you get a little map screen that shows where they all are.
Yeah, something I learned about the anime scene in Japan is that Cowboy Bebop is like not that popular or well known or like beloved over there. Like, it doesn't have the same cultural cachet that it does here in the United States. It's like, it's the equivalent of like everyone in Japan being obsessed with like Frasier or some show from the 90s, like that we don't ever think about or talk about here in the US.
The other anime I want to recommend is Delicious in Dungeon, which is actually airing right now alongside, it's being simulcast in Japan. So I think there's been 3 episodes so far. They're coming out 1 episode a week on Thursdays on Netflix. Premise here, so this is great. It's Trigger, the studio behind Cyberpunk, Edgerunners, and Kill la Kill. And adventurers are going on an adventure in a dungeon, and the mage in the group, who's the sister of this guy, the main adventure, like warrior guy, she gets eaten by a red dragon, and in her final act, she teleports them out of the dungeon to safety. And so they need to go back into the dungeon and rescue her, because I don't know why it's taking so long to be digested in a red dragon stomach, but they need to go back and rescue her. But they're all out of money. They have no money to buy food or supplies, so their plan is that they'll just catch and cook monsters in the dungeon, but they don't know how to do that. And they catch a giant scorpion and make it, and it's terrible, it's inedible. So they befriend a dwarf who is much more experienced than them, and he knows how to prepare all the monsters in the dungeon. So it kind of turns into a cooking show also, because they go into great detail with the dwarf explaining how you prepare a slime or a basilisk.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It's great.
That sounds amazing.
It's really good.
It is my all-time favorite manga. It has just recently finished its entire run. So it is a complete story. It's 97 chapters. I just read the finale like 2 days ago. And it is from beginning to end, I think there's no misses throughout this entire show / manga. It is very much predicated on vibes. It is a very smart look at like, you know, like wizardry style fantasy, like that kind of dungeon crawler experience. But it's all focused around like the logistics of a dungeon as an ecosystem. So, hey, you know, if there's water running into this dungeon, where is this water coming from? Mm-hmm. How do the monsters like feed? How do they, what's the chain of command? Like, what is the order of operations within the dungeon? And this entire story is very much like a smart look. Like, it's a very particular type of dungeon master who's like, no, I've considered all of the logistics of how this works, and it all makes sense. And it is so just clever and just charming, great slice of life. Like, you learn, everyone has like a lesson they learn, so it's a good thing. And no fan service. I'm a big no when it comes to fan service, where it's just pervy for no real reason in anime. This has none of that, and I'm a big fan for it. Also, the mangaka Ryoko Kui, she has a bunch of like one-off mangas that she's written, and they're all just so good. She's so talented. I'm so happy that she got to get an anime adaptation from Studio Trigger, and composed by Yasunori Mitsuda of Chrono Trigger and Xenoblade Chronicles.
Oh, amazing.
Wow, I didn't even realize that.
Is this like a PG show or R?
It's PG. There's some like monster violence, but that's about it. Like, there's like Medusas and stuff, so there is like the suggestion of breasts a la a Final Fantasy style sprite, but it's not salacious or anything like that.
There's boobs all over Final Fantasy.
Yeah. But it's
not like Kill la Kill or Cyberpunk Edgerunners.
There's no horn dogness in it all. It's all just very played straight.
It's good. The one thing I would say is that the episodes are short. They're 25 minutes long and there's only one episode a week. So maybe you'd want to wait a little while so you could watch the whole thing. That might be worth it too. But because I like it so much, I'm like, ugh. I want to watch more. I have to wait a whole week.
Yeah, each chapter seems to be, or each episode seems to combine about two chapters from the manga.
Yeah. Okay, anyone have any other extracurricular activities to share?
I'm mid Succession season 2.
Oh yeah?
Let's go.
I don't think any of the kids are going to win.
I don't even want to say nothing.
Win. I like how you put it, win.
By this point, none of them deserve to. So like, what am I watching from here on out?
What a treat. Wow, a treat you have in store.
There's some hard watching ahead in like a good way.
Yeah, I can tell.
Well, because, oh man, we'll have to offline about it. Now, I can't remember when certain things happen, so I don't know if it's happened yet.
Yeah, Roman is taking his management class, which is a good subplot right now.
Also, the dude from Severance is in his management class.
Yeah, exactly. And then Shiv is in the office for the first time, and she's like super jealous of, you know, of Kendall, who's like at the bottom of the curve of like in his life. So like she has no reason to be. It's so funny.
So
she immediately screws up her opportunity.
Yeah, 100%.
Okay, I just lost my FB.
That would be the same. That's a summary of every season of Succession.
It totally is, right?
That brings us to Video Game 20 Questions. Our suggestion this week comes from Gavin from Texas. Let the questioning begin.
Could this game have conceivably made it on your like short list for favorite game of all time, Damon?
Could it have?
Could it have been considered for it? Like, is it anywhere in like the ballpark? Could it have been in the mix?
No.
Now this game come out before Prince of Persia: Sands of Time?
No.
Okay. So wait.
Fast now.
That game came out in what? 2006? 2001?
Three.
Okay. I would guess. Two, maybe. Is this game playable on the Nintendo Switch?
Yes.
Oh boy.
Is this game an RPG?
No.
Is this game like a survival crafting game?
No. That's five.
I thought it was Minecraft there for a second.
Is this a console exclusive?
No.
Multiplat.
Boy.
Gavin.
I don't think we're on the right track.
Okay. So this game's playable on the Nintendo Switch, but was it new? Was it released for the first time in the era of the Nintendo Switch?
Yes.
Okay, so it's not some Nintendo Switch Online.
Would you call this an indie game?
No.
Oh, weird. So maybe it's like Wolfenstein or something?
Is this game... Well, okay, never mind. We know it's multi-platform.
Mm-hmm.
Is it helpful to know what other platforms?
I mean, it would have to be PS4 and Xbox Series consoles and PS5, right?
Wouldn't have to be. Well, yeah. I mean, yeah, one of the two.
I mean, I guess it could be a mobile game and a Switch game or something like that.
Yeah, something like that. Was this game made in Japan?
No.
I was thinking maybe like some of the streaming, it's like Resident Evil games and stuff like that.
Mm.
Mm-hmm. Was this published by Ubisoft, Square Enix? No. Let me think of that this again because there's plenty of Square. Was this published by Ubisoft, Square Enix, EA, or Activision?
Yes.
Okay.
But which one?
Is this game a third-person action game?
Mm.
Hold on. Is it a third person action game?
Yeah.
Is your question?
Maybe it's.
Because I'm thinking Assassin's Creed. I can't get off of Assassin's Creed.
Yes.
What Assassin's Creed is on Switch?
I wonder if that tripped Damon up because they're 2D games, side-scrolling games, third-person action games.
they have the Assassin's Creed. I think they have Assassin's Creed 3.
What were the four publishers? Ubisoft, Square Enix, EA, or Activision?
Correct.
Yeah.
Is this a Ubisoft or Square Enix game?
Yes.
Is it a Ubisoft game?
Yes.
Okay.
Oh man.
I don't know if that was worth it or not.
What if it's just the new Prince of Persia?
Yeah. Could be an Assassin's Creed. Damon said yes to third person action adventure, but it was a little bit of a weird one. Or action, I should say.
Is this game a Metroidvania?
Yes.
Is it the new Prince of... Well, I mean, we won't get there yet. Is this a game a new entry in a long dormant franchise?
Yes,
that's
it. Is this Prince of Persia: A Hat in Time?
Wait, no, that's not the name of the game.
Do you know?
I think it's The Lost Crown.
It is Prince of Persia: The Lost Crown. Yes.
Yeah.
Gavin from Texas thought that would be a funny game since we just mentioned. We've been talking about it recently. We mentioned the funny set of Prince of Persia last year.
Also the 1 week. Sam, this is the first week you haven't mentioned it.
No, I mentioned it at the start. I said, did this come out before Prince of Persia?
Oh, okay. That's right.
It was my clever twist.
This is on my short list.
Which probably threw Damon off a little bit when I asked him.
I wish you could have said, this didn't come out before The Lost Crown.
I got to play this game.
Yeah.
Very good game. Have you finished it yet, Sam?
No, it goes on. And like it gets difficult, and now I'm having to make calls in it. I play every night. And last night I played a lot, and I was playing a really tough puzzle that our team had like already done. It was like it's like a 2 minute platforming just disaster piece. And I finally like stopped because basically you have to watch a video or play it 30 times because each time you have to know where to like set your prince marker to miss this thing. You have to like basically, it's hard to explain if you haven't played the game, but it's bullshit. Right, like you have to either play it 30 times or watch a video. Like, there's no other option. You can't just get good. You have to do this. You have to get wrong 30 times to get it right. So I looked up what you do in it and where you win for it. Sorry, and you get a costume. So I was like, nah, fuck that. I'm not doing that. Right. So now I'm making decisions. Now I'm like, okay, I'm back on my exploration. I'm going to like big things. I also have like really high. Like I did a bunch of exploration for life bar and for attack power, which I highly recommend both. But then I'm like, well, a bunch of the other things that I'm getting right now are like, they're like missile tanks, but worse. They're the Xerxes coins. Like, I don't need those. Mm. I just don't need them. So like now I'm trying to mainline a little bit because there's a lot of things I want to play and watch, even based on this episode alone of Game Scoop.
Not that you would use it, Sam, but you know, there's a feature where you can skip the platforming sections.
No, I knew there's a feature you can turn on where the, the next big destinations are, and that's just what Metroid does by default. Yeah. So I thought it'd do a lot more than that, but it doesn't.
Yeah.
No, I didn't know that. How does it work? Do you just float?
No, it creates a little portal at the beginning of the section, and it'll warp you to the other end.
Cool.
So like I don't.
Oh, that's cool.
So cool.
I don't use it, but I turn that feature on so I see the portal just so I know
where you're.
Okay,
going.
this is going to be a platforming section. Maybe I don't want to do that right now. I'll come back to that later.
You can pause. Yeah, exactly. You have to psych yourself up for some of them. They get so hard. So what's cool is that even though I skipped that one I'm talking about, that's not indicative of what I've been doing. I've really solved everything until now. It's just now I'm like, well, I don't need to do these side explorations as much because when I'm going to my main things, they're getting so difficult to traverse to get to the main areas that like that's giving my fill for the evening. Mm-hmm.
That's my favorite thing in Metroidvania is when they have the Hollow Knight Path of Pain, the thing that is just the hard as hell platforming challenge. I love that stuff. I eat it up.
Yeah, like the shine. There's like the shine sparking stuff too, which is just like super painful in Metroid where you have to like, you know, run up those little inclines and duck and then save it and then go up and then duck. Like those are actually kind of my favorite puzzles in like any game ever. I love those. And like for our last Metroid guide, I captured all of them. Like those are the ones I did even though I reviewed the game, I was like, I'm just going to do these while I'm doing this because I love it. But this game, I'm not as like married to this game as I would be to a Metroid game, which I always 100%. Mm-hmm. I don't need 100% this game, I've determined, but I'm very, very much like 95%ing it right now.
Yeah. Great game. The map is... I mean, I have to compare it, but I just feel like it's so much bigger than like Symphony of the Night.
Damn it. It gets so much bigger than I even thought already. And last night I played this part, which is a frozen in time ocean.
Whoa.
And it looks so cool. And you're like platforming around these like giant tsunami waves that also have parts of boats in
them. What am I doing here? What am I doing listening to this? I got to play this game.
It is like one of the best looking like 2D, I know it's 3D, and that's why it looks so good, levels I've ever seen in my entire life.
Yeah.
It is so cool.
Great game. 2024 is off to a good start, not wasting any time, just throwing lots of great games at us.
Yeah. Yep.
Thanks, 2024. All right, that is all the scoops that we have here this week. Viewers, listeners, if you have your own suggestions for 20 questions, email them to me at the email address gamescoop@ign.com. Thank you to Nick for joining me here in the studio. Thank you both Sam and Justin. And thank you to Jobert working behind the scenes to make this episode possible. My name is Damon. This is IGN Game Scoop, and we're out.
Real quick, we lost IFB on Damon.
Yeah, sure. Okay.
I don't want to say anything about the ending, except I'll say it's so good. It's so good. Like, it completely, like, the show goes from strength to strength, and you're like, surely they won't, like, stick the landing, but it completely does in every way, and, like, has the exact opposite effect of, like, a Game of Thrones that, like, shits the bed on the ending so much that, like, yeah. I never want to rewatch the show, or, like, Succession's the exact opposite.
Nice.
Yeah, there's a consistent vision for that show that... It was very like plain to see that they had a clear outline of how it would end. Mm-hmm. So it's hitting those points.
Really?
It's just
you
like,
think so?
Oh yeah, 100%.
It's like it's a candidate for like most satisfying, good like conclusions and climaxes to like a television show ever, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. It'd be hard to write that feature because it's just a spoiler. Like it's just spoilers for every show. But like best finales, it would be up there for sure.
I 100% agree. Yeah. That final season is masterful, I think, from beginning to end too. I just also think it's nuts that show has a wealth consultant where it's like, no, rich people wouldn't wear this. They would wear this.
Wow. That's crazy. I have a lot of questions about that type of production of like the ultra wealth. That makes sense.
No logos.
One of the key...
No logos.
And yeah, one of the key takeaways was that many ultra rich people either don't own or never have a coat. Just because they go directly from their car to their plane to their car to wherever they're going inside. And then there's a guy in season 4 that doesn't wear shoes. He's got like the extreme version of that.
There's only 8 more days to see Godzilla in theaters. The site, their own website has a countdown until it's out of theaters, which is really cool.
That's weird. What it's about like, the but
black
just keep
and white
it.
Version that's come after that?
I think black and white version.
Yeah, that comes after.
Yeah, that's soon. I just can't wait to own that movie on like a 4K disc.
Yeah.
We don't need to say it on, I don't care to do this on extracurricular activities, but just very quick. We started watching Rings of Power. My wife and I were both like, let's give it another try. And then we both fell asleep.
That is.
Yeah, I tried to get my wife to watch the last 3 episodes because there's like actual interesting moments in lore that happen in them. And she fell asleep immediately.
Yep.
Same here, man. I love Lord of the Rings, but that show made it a chore.
Yep.
It's kind of a lore chore.
Chore of the Rings.
Anna Sheridan. New York Times bestselling author of Supernatural Horror. Missing for nearly 6 months now.
That's not possible. Is the compass broken? Or did I turn to the sleep habit?
Given the circumstances of her disappearance, someone with a more vivid imagination might decide she'd pierced the veil, so to speak.
Weak radio signal. 700 meters. Closing fast.
There's no place for ghost stories and close encounters in this investigation, or any other.
I need you to find me.
To save yourself.
Of course. What else would it be?
The Sheridan Tapes, a serialized horror mystery podcast. Stream the complete series today on Realm and on all podcasting platforms.